Sorry about that. Good evening. I'd like to call the Planning Commission work session to order for Thursday, August 3rd, 2023. My name is Matt Swindell, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Clark County Planning Commission. Before we begin tonight, we'd like to announce that our Planning Commission work sessions are hybrid, both in person and via WebEx. For the virtual and in-person members of the Planning Commission and staff, please ensure that your microphones are turned off and muted unless you are speaking. There will not be any public comment during this work session, but members of the public can watch or listen. This evening's agenda is planned as follows. We will be going into an executive session, and then we'll be coming, returning from that. It'll be about 30 minutes, and then we'll be returning from that and going into our Clark County Aging Readiness Plan, and then we'll do our Essentials Public Facilities, and then we'll take comments, members of the Planning Commission, and adjourn. With that said, right here. At this time, what's that? Okay. At this time, we will adjourn our meeting and go into executive session. The purpose of the executive session is to consider potential litigation under RCW 42.30.1101I. This session will last approximately 30 minutes, and the Planning Commission does not anticipate taking public action, like voting on what was discussed after and in response to the executive session. You want me to stop video? Stop video.
This meeting is being recorded.
Hi, for the record, this is Jenna Kay with Community Planning. The executive session with the Planning Commission is going to be extended for 10 more minutes, and then we expect them to return. Thanks for your patience.
Okay, we will now return to our regular scheduled meeting. And we're here to go over our next item on the agenda is the Clark County Aging Readiness Plan. Susan, take it away.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Susan Ellinger. I'm a planner with Community Planning, and I'm here tonight with Jenna Kay, who's also with a planner with Community Planning. And we both staff the Commission on Aging. And the Commission on Aging is a 9-member volunteer group that is charged with implementing the Aging Readiness Plan. And in 2021, the plan was almost 10 years old, and they decided to ask council for funding to update the plan, and that funding was approved. And so we did a request for proposals and brought the firm Dudek on board to help us update the plan. So since that time, we've been working on the update, and we've had several outreach activities, and we now have a draft of the plan. And I'm really happy to introduce Rose Newberry, who has been the project manager with Dudek, and she's going to give you some project background, review the engagement that we went through, and also give you a summary of the updated plan elements, goals, and strategies. So without further ado, here is Rose.
Thank you. Thank you for having me tonight. And I apologize now for my voice. I am recovering from whatever disease my daughter brought home from preschool, but I'll try to speak as clearly as possible and answer any questions. Next slide. So first, to talk about why we're here today and giving an overview of the presentation. Next slide. So like Susan said, we'll review kind of the project background and why we updated the plan, present an overview of the public engagement we did as part of this planning effort. I'll give you an overview of the goals and the policies of each chapter, explain how to read a strategy, talk about next steps in the planning process, and answer any questions you might have. Next slide. Okay, I'll talk about some project background. So the original age readiness plan was approved in 2012, developed from community input, and it was collaboratively developed and implemented by the Commission on Aging. It included 5 chapters. You can see listed there: living healthier and longer, housing opportunities, transportation and mobility, supporting your health, well-being, and independence, and turning silver into gold. It included 91 strategies, and then every year the Commission on Aging produced progress reports to see how the plan was being implemented across the county. Next slide. So the Age Readiness Plan is a really unique plan, as it hopefully will be adopted by the county, but then is also a guidance document across the county for the cities and town. So it highlights the best practices and recommendations for local jurisdictions. It sets standards for community involvement and monitoring. And then it connects planning and abstinence service providers, because a large part of the plan depends on the work of ATSWA, the Area on Aging Disability Services of Southwest Washington, and first responders. A lot of parties here are responsible for an age-ready community, and we're trying to connect them all. Next slide. So why update beyond the fact that it's been 10 years? One was to address natural and human caused hazards. The Commission on Aging felt that this was an area that was not addressed in 2012, and that was really important to address in this update. It includes incorporating what we've learned from the pandemic. Another reason is that there's a really large percentage of people retiring now, and that older adults cover multiple generations, and it's much more diverse group in age, race, income, and so just a different senior population and now in the next decade. We also wanted to create a framework for monitoring progress. As I mentioned, the Commission on Aging produces those annual progress reports, so we wanted to make that a little bit more streamlined and clear. And then there's also been some big changes in the world since 2012, things like new transportation options, increased housing costs, housing options and zoning regulations, and then an increase in technology and virtual communication, especially spurred by the pandemic, that we wanted to recognize. Next slide. So where are we in the planning process? We're almost done, which is really exciting. So we started out with document review. We wanted to understand the original plan and keep a lot of the good stuff that was in there. We then did stakeholder interviews with those responsible for implementing the plan to understand how well the 2012 plan was working. We collected a lot of data from AARP and other sources. We have focus group meetings to talk about each chapter and the goals and hurdles those community members saw. We evaluated the 91 strategies with a lot of help from staff to see how well they were working. We got feedback on those strategies from the public. We then asked the public to prioritize those strategies. We published a draft plan that's in your packet today and also on the internet. And now we're here today presenting and hopefully having the county adopt the plan. Next slide. Great, so now I'll talk about public engagement process. Like I said, the first thing we did was stakeholder workshops. And so we had focus groups for each of the existing each of the chapters that included transportation, support services, and which is other outside agencies, housing, healthy communities, and emergency management. We asked them what makes a community age friendly, and you can see some results on your screen. And then for each of those end states, those age friendly goals, we asked them about any hurdles or solutions they had. And that helped us frame up how we'd be structuring the strategies and the content of those chapters. Next slide. Then we did a strategy workshop where we took the draft strategies we had in the old plan, some of them we had removed or made new ones. And then for each of the strategies we were going to move forward with, we asked the public 4 questions. Who, where, when, and why. So each strategy had its own board, as you can see on your screen. So this one is locate senior housing near transit services and retail. And we add, and then the participants could say who that was important for, where in the county it should go, when that should happen, and why it should happen. And these responses help revise and shape those strategies. Next slide. And then our final public engagement event was a partition workshop. And so again, we had the goal on each board, and then the smaller ones are the strategies. And participants were given dots, and they got to vote on which ones were most important to them. They also got comments. They could write comments on sticky notes and add them. And then the amount of community support for each strategy influenced foundational strategies in the plan. So ones that we highlighted as things that need to happen first, either because they provide the groundwork moving forward for all the other strategies, or because the community said they were so important. Next slide. And now I'm going to give you an overview of every chapter. So on each slide, I'll read you the goal and some strategies, and you can read the rest of them, just so we don't take all of your time. So the Healthy Communities chapter is focused on fresh food, access to parks, and healthy living. So our first goal there was improving access to healthy food. And then one of the strategies was to expand access to fresh and local food. Next slide. Another goal was to create safe and accessible parks, green spaces, and community gathering spaces. One of the strategies for that was adding universal design standards into all park plans. So that's making it accessible to people of various ability levels. Next slide. Our third goal was to create a welcoming and age-friendly built environment. And one of our standards there was to promote age-friendly business practices and initiatives. Next slide. Our fourth goal was to develop local and community-based healthcare resources. And one of the strategies to implement that was to promote and expand the Are You OK program countywide, which is a reverse 911 service. Next slide. Our fifth goal was to provide resources to caregivers, such as one of our strategies was to provide educational opportunities for caregivers and older adults about virtual communication with doctors, with telehealth instant messages, making sure that caregivers get the support they need, and so they have the capacity to support the older adults they either live with or support. Next slide. So our next chapter was our housing chapter. Our first goal in the housing chapter was to provide a range of housing for multi-generational communities, so where people of different ages live together. One of those strategies was to expand shared housing programs for older adults. So finding younger roommates that may be able to help out with chores for reduced rent. Next slide. Our next goal was to provide housing that enables people to age in place. So that's senior, older adults and seniors staying in their homes as their abilities change with age. And one of the strategies was to incorporate universal design into building code. And again, that is designed for people of all abilities. So 0-step entrances, people within wheelchairs can access the home, wider doorways, so that people as their abilities change and maybe need mobility devices can stay in those homes. Next slide. Our third goal was to support the development of more affordable housing. One strategy there was to promote higher density housing and mixed use on underused properties. Next slide. Our next chapter was our mobility chapter. That's about people getting around, walking, biking, rolling, in a wheelchair or other mobility device, or taking transit. So one of our goals here was to design transit options for people who are older or have a disability. One of our strategies was to improve infrastructure to be more comfortable for older adults and people with disabilities. Next slide. Our next goal was to increase alternative transportation options in areas not well served by transit lines. One strategy here was to increase the use of neighborhood electric vehicles, like golf carts, as a mobility option. Next slide. Our third goal for mobility was to design communities that are safe for walking and rolling for a range of users, so not just those that are really comfortable walking and biking and rolling. And one strategy here was to expand the network of complete streets throughout the county. Next slide. Our fourth goal was to promote land use patterns and design standards that encourage walking and rolling and transit use. And so a strategy here was to strengthen mobility standards infrastructure in new development. Next slide. The next chapter we have is a civic involvement chapter. So this is about older adults participating in their communities, access to volunteer, and other events. Our first goal was to support the effort of neighborhood associations and other volunteer groups to reach and engage older adults. One of the strategies here is to connect with AARP resources and networks to expand the capacity of local governments to do this. Next slide. Our next goal was to support cross-cultural and intergenerational community events. A strategy here was to connect youth and school organizations with older adults, as you can see in the picture, such as a reading program. Next slide. Our third goal was to continue to offer a variety of engagement opportunities in person and online. So one strategy here, and it came up a lot, was to expand broadband access in all areas of the county so that rural older adults have access to online opportunities. Next slide. And our last chapter, and this is our new chapter, was emergency preparedness. Our first goal here was to mitigate the impacts of hazards before they occur. One goal here was to manage the urban forest to enhance public health goals for older adults, which would mitigate extreme heat. Next slide. Our next goal was to prepare for natural hazards through education and improved communication. One strategy to do that was to develop older adult specific alerts and communication channels to make sure that older adults know when they need to respond to a hazard. Next slide. Our third goal was to provide essential services to older adults during hazard events. One strategy here is to provide an emergency evacuation shuttle service for older adults that cannot drive and evacuate themselves. Next slide. So that's all of our strategies, or I mentioned some of them to you, they're all on the slides. And now I'll explain to you how to read a strategy in the plan. So as you can see on your screen in the plan, the strategies across the top expand access to fresh and local food. On the left-hand side, we have a score. This one's new, but in other ones, it's scored between 1 and 5 based on how well it's been implemented. The lower the score, the more challenged it's been, and the higher, the more successful. Under that, we have resources from a separate strategy. And so this is a web link planners at the county or the cities can use to see examples of how to implement the strategy. We also have case studies. These are local examples of how this has been implemented in Washington or Portland. The commission, which data the Commission on Aging should look at when they're doing their annual reports to understand that this is happening in the county. On the right-hand side, we have a long text measure description. And so it explains in much more detail what we mean by expand access to fresh and local food. It also has a type, this advocacy. Other types are ordinances or partnerships This explains the planning tool someone would use to implement this. It also informs the score, because you can't score how well advocacy over code changes are going. They're just too different. We've included interested parties. So this is the implementers of the strategy. So for this one, we have the cities, public health, farmers and farmers markets. People who think that the county or city should engage when implementing the strategy. And then lastly, we've defined some key terms that not everyone might know that we've included in the strategy. So we're hoping all this detail really helps the county planners and also the cities that may want to adopt some of these strategies, implement them more effectively. Next slide. All right, talking about next steps. So here we are at the work session on August 3rd. We'll go to hearing on the 17th, have a council work session on the 13th, and a hearing on the 26th. I'm obviously all hoping to move towards adoption. Next slide. Great. And then just talking about implementation, because again, this is a pretty unique plan. So the ARP will serve as a tool for many cities and towns in Clark County to serve as they individually prepare their communities to support the aging population. So not every city may adopt every strategy, they might pick and choose, but it is really there to serve as a best practice document. The Age Readiness Plan will improve interjurisdictional coordination to address issues that span across jurisdictional boundaries. So we're hoping this can create some best practices and relationships, but also there are service providers that serve the whole county, at least parts of it, that we're hoping we can connect everyone that serves older adults. It will also inform the annual Commission on Aging or COA work plans that will move the strategies forward in the plan. And then lastly, staff will review the planning, code and ordinances strategies to suggest timing of requests to county and cities. So within the plan, there are some code changes we're hoping will be adopted across the county. Next slide. Now you can ask me or staff any questions about the plan.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. That was a very nice presentation. Okay. Let's bring it back to the Planning Commission. Let's start with Bryant. Have any questions?
How does this align with the changes, the amendments, the code changes and amendments that we did at the last planning session? So staff going to align this with those changes, or how's that going to work?
So this is Susan Ellinger. I think you're talking about the housing code changes.
Yes. Correct.
So okay. So these code changes, this plan supports the same types of strategies that are in the housing options study and action plan. The code changes that are proposed help implement the strategies that are in the aging readiness plan. They do not, there's no conflicts between the two. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Brian Halbert.
Sure. Thanks, Rose, for the presentation. And just a question, when in 2012, there were 91 strategies or goals in the plan. Are those being replaced now completely with the new goals and strategies that you presented, and the 91 are really going away?
A lot of the 91 are there, and I actually don't know how many strategies we have. We worked with staff, and staff gets all the credit here. They went through every strategy and explained to us how well it had gone. And so anything that had been explored in the last 10 years, but it had been found to not work, we removed that. Or anything that we kind of deemed done and didn't have a next step was also removed. And then we added some new strategies based on emerging technologies. And then the entire emergency preparedness chapter is also new.
Great, thanks, that's all.
All right, Steve Moresh, you have any questions?
No, no questions. Just wanted to thank staff for a good presentation. I can't believe it's been over 10 years. I mean, it seems like we just adopted this plan. So I guess I'm an example of aging in place here, being that it seems like it's a brand new plan and it's already been 10 years. But good presentation. I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Eldon, do you have any questions?
So, yeah, I agree. It's a great plan. So there's a lot of strategies that will have to be implemented, and they go across many departments within the county. How does that all get tied together? I mean, I imagine they'll get a point that if this gets adopted, then there's going to be some strategies that the planning department is going to be responsible, parks, whatever. How is there an overall program manager that watches all this over time, or how does that? I'm looking at it from a program management standpoint.
Sure.
To implement.
Yeah. I guess I would say that the Commission on Aging is really the oversight group.
Okay.
And we as staff help them implement the plan overall. But we frequently work with other departments. You picked up on one of them, public health, but public works, community development, yeah, on all of these strategies. And so I guess I would say together staff with the commission help to work with all of those groups. And we invite them to meetings, ask them to, you know, work with us on projects like ordinances and programs, but we also work with service providers. So the Area Agency on Aging of Southwest Washington, and Area Agency on Aging and Disabilities of Southwest Washington is a partner. CTRAN, Community in Motion, there are different service providers that are partners with the Commission on Aging and also help implement different strategies.
So basically, the Commission on Aging is going to be looking at it, the whole scheme.
Yes.
And see,
right,
that they all come together.
Yeah,
eventually.
Exactly. They, okay, like to call themselves conveners, and so they try to bring groups together to have these conversations, and they're frequently not the ultimate implementer,
right,
but they work with the groups that do the implementation.
So I imagine to be real successful, that commission's going to have some go-getters then.
Well, I'm excited to say that we have one of our commission members online and one here in the room, and I would say they're definitely go-getters.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, great. Jack, any questions?
Yeah, thanks so much for the presentation. I was wondering, was there any kind of hierarchy given on a recommendation from a cost basis standpoint of, do we look at what the implications, the cost implications and the practicality of some of the recommendations were being, that were being made?
The priority.
So
that's
go ahead, Rose.
Okay. There is some priority in the plan. You'll see that some strategies are marked as foundational. But that is more from community input or strategies we felt had to happen first, that other strategies depended on. So there was not an assessment of cost. I will say none of the strategies strike me as wildly expensive. They're mostly code changes, and they were developed alongside the implementers. And so there was a gut check about if these are practical. And so no, there was not priority in the cost, but certainly every strategy and implementation was really bound in reality, and working with the implementers that would be responsible. So we feel pretty confident that we didn't write you a check that will be unattainable.
Right. I think one of the things that I see is from an implementation standpoint, when we look at one of the things that talking with our older generation, they're like, why aren't ranches built? Why isn't single level building built? Why do we have to have steps, or why do we have to have stairs? And then when we talk about incorporating universal design into building code, that actually has some pretty significant costs from a building thing. But then one of the other things in your report was talking about reducing housing costs and making housing more affordable for our elderly population. And so when I kind of look at the nexus between those of like, I think it's important that both things are important, right? Like reduced housing costs, accessibility, universal design, aging in place. But I don't want to gloss over those things as without consequence. When we look at increasing trails and open space, but then decreasing urban sprawl, but yet we want ranches, but we need density and vertical housing. Those things are in direct conflict with each other, and certainly with the new housing option study, which really focuses on density. So I'm concerned that there's not a nod to some of these issues that need to be worked out, and it bothers me when I see it neglected, because I think sometimes these are things that come up later, and that maybe there's some strategies or some policies we can develop that work around some of those things to help set us up for success. So that's my thoughts there.
Okay, thank you, Jack. Is Carl with us? I didn't see him out there. Carl, you with us? I don't think he's on the call here. Okay, with that, I guess the only question I had, and I probably just missed it. Fantastic presentation. I'm getting older, so I really like this. So I see people in the pictures that look younger than me, and I'm going, uh-oh, it's coming quick. So thank you for all this work that you guys have done and all the thought that you've put into our elderly community. The one question I asked, because my mother, who just recently passed, one of the things that we were looking for was like, where do we find that some of these things that we could use? I'm sure there is, I just didn't see it. Is there a strategy and implementation of how do we get this information out to the elderly community? So if they're at an old folks home, or I shouldn't say it that way, but in an assisted living, something like that, or the RITs as some of them are, what does that look like? How do we get that information to them?
Sure. The chapter to look for most information is the community involvement or the civic engagement chapter. I think it's called civic involvement, actually. And so there is a really big focus on getting information out to older adults. And this generally includes working with providers that are already in touch with those communities, not trying to create a whole new thing. So we really looked at that as an avenue. Supporting neighborhood groups and existing trusted sources is the main avenue we had for getting information to the people that need it.
Okay. Okay, great. No, that's great. It seems like no matter how hard you try to get the information out, some people just don't get it, and that's hard to hit that community, I'm sure, because a lot of them are immobile or it's hard for them to get around, and so they're in an adult family home or something like that where they can't get to some of these services. So great work, great job. I just think it's absolutely fantastic, and so that's all I have to say. Thank you, guys, very much.
Thank you so much, and I just wanted to add that the Commission on Aging's focus for the remainder of this year is community engagement and looking just at that exact topic and how to get the word out and looking at other communities that are doing the same thing and learning from those. So just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you. That's great.
Matt, this is Oliver. I know that the Southwest Washington area is also a good source for helping folks navigate whatever issues that they have. So they're also a good resource out there.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And we'll move on to our next item on the agenda, which is essential public facilities. Jose?
Matt? Yes? Yeah. I just want to follow up on a question that you raised to Rose. Okay. And maybe we can see it at the session on the 17th. Is could we have more information in terms of what the plan has put in place since 2012? And just a summary of some of those highlights in terms of what has been done and how that impact those services are available to the senior committees here in Clark County. So I just want to follow up on that question that you sort of raised. I think it'd be a good introduction at the next meeting.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Just a couple more minutes. Thanks.
Yeah, no. Great point. Great point. Okay, we got that? Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you. All right, then we'll move on to the next one. Jose, are you presenting or?
It's gonna be Mike Salas.
Hi, guys. So, good evening, members of the Planning Commission. And I just wanna apologize real quick. My name is Michael Salas and I'm a planner with Clark County Community Planning for the record. But I also have a bad cold I got from my daughter. And so I apologize for the roughness of my voice. But I'm here to talk to you and give you some information on essential public facilities. Next slide. So what we're going to do is what we're going to cover today is a quick background on essential public facilities. And then the proposed action that we're doing with the code and then staff's findings, recommendations, and then the process and next steps. Next slide. So basically essential public facilities, or what we call EPF, means any public facility owned or operated by a unit of local, state, or federal government, public or private utility, transportation company, or any other entity that provides a public service as a primary mission and is difficult to site. EPFs, or what we're sort of having the acronym for, includes but not limited to those facilities that are identified in RCW 3670A-200 and may also include facilities such as regional wastewater treatment facilities, hospitals, airports, and you can see the list of those in the slide. Next slide. The proposed actions that we're covering with the code and also other portions of the code that we have is to create a new code section that provides a process for citing EPFs. We add a definition to the EPF and a timeline of the EPF pre-application reviews, require a narrative submittal for EPF pre-applications, and then add cross references to the new EPF code for areas that are used in other parts of the code. Excuse me. Next slide. So in summary, we were looking at the consistency of what the what was applicable under the requirements of GMA and also the WAC and the comprehensive plan, and may respond to submittal change in policy, better implement applicable comprehensive plan policies, and reflect changes in the federal and state law. Our findings were better implement RCW 3670A-200 and WAC 365-196-550 on the comprehensive plan and county code Clark County Code regarding provisions of broad range and public participation options. And these seem, what we put together seem to meet the criteria of what we needed to cover for essential public facilities in Clark County. Staff is looking for a recommendation of approval. And where we're at now is this is the work session for this particular topic. And then we'll have our hearing on the 17th and followed by a council work session and a council hearing. And we'll just open up to discussions.
Okay. Thank you for your presentation. We'll start with you, Bryant. Do you have any questions?
Matt, none at this time.
Sorry, I looked at you and said Bryant. So, okay, all right. Sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Bryant. Okay. Bryant, do you have any questions?
Bryant here, yeah. Michael, is this a requirement of GMA, or what's driving the implementation of the essential public facilities?
Yeah, this is a requirement under GMA. There was a small delay in the requirements coming out due to some of the behavioral guidelines that they had through Commerce, but yeah, this is definitely a requirement.
Is this a policy that GMA is requiring the county to fund, or does GMA also, or the state, I guess, help fund putting this ordinance together? It looks like this is really just the very first step in putting an ordinance together. Am I seeing that right?
Well, we already have a way to deal with some essential public facilities. This in particular is for those that are challenging the site and or difficult to site within each county in the state. And they give some leeway on how we want to implement this. And so part of the way that we wanted to implement is use existing processes that we already have in place. So if it was not difficult to cite, then this falls under a type 2A process. And if it is difficult to cite, we do put it under a type 3 process. And we try to provide, we have the applicant provide information that will help either mitigate or help with the siting of the essential public facilities. But as far as funding, no, we didn't get any funding for doing this. It's just the requirement.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, Steve Moresh, do you have any questions?
No questions. Thank you. Hope you feel better soon.
Thank you.
All right, Eldon.
So you said this is for a requirement for GMA. Is this a new requirement for GMA?
It's not new, but it does have some nuances to it where there's portions that, like the behavioral health portion that was not included in the original requirement, and they added language for that for those counties that use behavioral health guidelines.
So could I add to that? So this isn't a new requirement. There was a lawsuit in 2019 that created some new legislation. And when we reviewed that, we noticed that while we talk about essential public facilities in some sections of our code, we didn't really have a process that's required by the state to deal with it. And so we realized that we needed to create that process. To be compliant. We were waiting for some, like, as Michael said, updates to a behavioral health modification, and there were some model code language that the state was going to develop. When that came out, we realized it didn't really, wasn't the direction we were going in with this. So we just decided to pursue creating this process and the code sections that you see before you.
Okay, I think I understand, but to cite a hard to cite facility though, there was already existing processes, right?
There were some, so we have some things that are in our code where some of these essential public facilities that meet that definition, there's zoning that allows them. Solid waste handling facilities as one is allowed in multiple zones and as a conditional use, but it didn't really have this other code section that dealt with identifying whether it was difficult to cite or not. And so it's just an additional process, both for those facilities in citing those and for the public in understanding and having a process and more say in that citing and location.
Okay. So it basically expands the process then?
To some extent, it creates, so for example, the pre-app, yeah, so.
And I'm just trying to understand why is this new code needed?
Again, it's trying to balance both sides. The conditional use is going to be the ultimate thing, but yeah. We're creating a process so that we can identify that as early in the process as possible at the pre-application stage, so that you determine whether it's actually going to be difficult to cite or not, and then that goes. If it is difficult to cite, there are additional criteria that have to be met when it goes through the process. So in that sense, there's a little more more work that has to be done sort of on the applicant side to meet the criteria that's in the code.
Okay, I'm sure the devil's in the details on this, but to me it seems kind of fairly evident that something's going to be hard to cite. An airport's going to be hard to cite. I mean, it's intuitive.
Well, there's some things that may not be that aren't that may not be in our code currently. So, like for airports, we have an airport designation, so okay. That's really not included. The same with educational. We have a university district. We've already determined where that's going to be, but there are some things that might not be. That may come across. There's some things that the state is locating a behavioral health facility, and we had that issue that came up is across from a school, and there was a lot of concern from the neighbors and the location of that in its proximity to school, and it would have been helpful to have a process where we could have had more engagement with both the community and with the applicant, which was the state at the time.
All right, I'm not going to pretend that I understand why we need this. It's still fuzzy to me, but all right.
Okay, thanks. Jack, you have any questions?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, other commissioners have covered, but just to kind of follow up, so the facility that you just spoke about, I actually written down in my notes, my daughter is going to be attending iTech Middle School, and they're building a facility for the criminally insane across the street. Would this provide the public and the school district and the concerned parents more opportunity to set safety parameters or restrictions around a facility like that, or does it expedite the process for those facilities to go through without public comment? Does it become more restrictive or less restrictive, easier or harder for the applicant in those scenarios?
I wouldn't say that it expedites the process. It sort of creates more process for them to satisfy the criteria. Well, it's trying to balance. We can't preclude the location of it, but we can try to mitigate for the impacts. And I think it provides the county more opportunity to mitigate or offset some of those impacts.
Okay, so to touch on something we read in the paper, the waste transfer station that we have off SR 500, it looks like it needs to be expanded because of our population and the amount of trash and that stuff. So in this scenario, difficult to site facility because nobody wants to dump transfer station next to their house or expanded facility. How would this help or hinder? Because we absolutely need those facilities, and at some point you don't want continual lawsuits to never ever get a facility built. But you also need that. So is that kind of the line that we're trying to walk between the two, that we're getting better public comment without shutting down the projects?
Right. Like I said, the state doesn't allow us to prohibit it.
Right.
But it gives us some tools to try to make it more palatable to the neighbors. To the extent that's possible.
So under this, like maybe one of the solutions for taking like print waste transfer, that we require the applicant to build a 12-foot cinder block wall or something to help contain garbage and smell and something like that. That wouldn't typically be part of the code, but could be a condition of the permit.
And even looking at requiring them to look or to provide something to us, that is this the best location? Right. How many locations did you look at? Why is this better than all of the others?
Okay.
That sort of due diligence is putting the onus on them.
Got you. So the state can't just say, this is the property we bought across the street from the school. We can say, maybe we put it over here.
Right. While respecting, if they go through their own like due diligence process, because some of the state have their own process,
right.
But I don't think that happened for that site. My daughter just graduated from there,
so mine's just starting.
Okay. And Jose, if I may chime in, one of the things that you mentioned, which was a transfer station, which is an existing site, if they wanted to expand that site, they would have to go through this process. So it's not an expansion. In other words, even if it's already existing, the expansion portion of it would have to go through this process.
Okay, all right. I actually was gonna kind of come back to what Alden was going on. I was gonna try to see if maybe I could seek a little clarification. I think I'm understanding what we're doing here, maybe, but tell me if I'm wrong. Sounds like we kind of have it here, and we kind of have it here, and we kind of have it. But what we're doing is we're saying we're going to codify it and put it here. That way everybody can see what the process is. We know what the process is. The applicant knows what the process is, and we can better engage the public because we all know what the process is. So we're not adding another thing. We're just taking what we kind of already have here and there and making it really good and better. And we'll probably continually make it better as we go through this process. Am I understanding that right?
I think that's accurate. It's consolidating it and maybe a little more threshold.
Okay.
The bar is maybe a little higher.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. All right. Does anybody else have any questions that maybe you have missed? Brian, did you have any other things? Jump in there?
Yeah, I'll just say, maybe to you, Jack. One of the restrictions that the county still has is if it's under a conditional use permit, that's where they get to add those sound walls and other types of restrictions above and beyond what the code has. So I think that's part of this process is a lot of these facilities have to go through a conditional use permit. So you get... It exists, but they're talking about codifying it in a different way.
Go ahead.
This is Oliver. I think staff, both Mike and Jose, answered the question. The only thing I wanted to add is that you covered it also, Commissioner Matt. This is not to make it expensive. It's more of providing a process so that everybody knows, including the public. Sometimes we say to the applicant, you have to go and meet with the neighborhood organization, get buy-in before you come back to us. Some of those things are written in code. Some of them are not. There are some facilities that are not prohibited. The state says you cannot prohibit it, but you should allow it, but provide the applicant and the public to know what your process is. I think staff mentioned the behavioral health that went into Salmon Creek area, I believe, next to a school. We didn't know about it. Let me be honest, staff didn't know about it. The county didn't know about it until the state submitted an application. They already acquired the site. You know, so it became difficult for us to react. You know, so that's really what this is getting at. There are very, very minor changes, but at least it provides us a process. You know, take, for example, siting a correctional facility. Who wants it? But you need to have a process so that everybody knows, and how do you then mitigate the impact of that? That's where we go through the pre-app, and we can identify things you need to be aware of. And then if it goes to the hearing examiner through type 3 process, there might be some conditions or bookends put to it in terms of approval. At some point in the past, the school district wanted some schools to be labeled as essential public facilities. They didn't get that through the legislature. We don't prohibit schools. We don't prohibit correctional facilities like the jail here may be on the line to be expanded on the land that the county owns, but we have to walk through the city process to get that done. It doesn't mean that it will be very expensive for the county. It may be in the future, depending on the cost, but this is not to make things very expensive.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, and with that, Jack? Yes. Yep. Okay.
I wanted to just, I guess, for the good of the commissioner, I noticed specifically with the housing option studies really kind of highlighted it for me. I mean, I spent 4 years with the City of Vancouver Planning Commission, and we would have workshops, and our workshops would then we would provide input, there'd be changes made oftentimes based on our comments at the workshops. They would come back to us sometimes, typically at workshop, or if there was minor changes, they wouldn't come back to us at hearing after that work was done. I've noticed on our calendar, we're required prior to our hearing to have 15 days of published documentation prior to our hearing. In essence, the way I see our calendar work, documents are dropped prior to the 15 days of hearing. We have the workshop. 15 days later, we have our hearing, but there's never any time to make changes because we've already published what we're going to be voting on. And what strikes me, what's bothersome to me, is it then makes our workshops feel to me like very much a rubber stamp committee versus an active participation and a chance to take input and make modifications to it. And it's a very different process than I experienced in the city. And so I wanted us to consider that we don't have a workshop and then 15 days later have the hearing. I know that's like looking back at the calendar, I see that seems to be rote of what we've done. In the past, when we went, speaking of the city experience, if we had issues with something or comments or wanted expansion, it goes back to staff. And then staff would rework it, and we would have, oftentimes we'd go to the point and say, it looks like we need to have another workshop on this. And sometimes that would happen 2 or 3 times until we had something through workshop that we felt comfortable with. Then it was published, then we had the hearing on it, and then we voted on it. It's for me, it's an open government thing, it's a public process thing, and it's I think honoring the Planning Commission and the knowledge base that we were appointed to bring, so we're providing something that we feel good about to council. The other thing that, and I didn't realize it was in the code, was that we couldn't kick stuff back to staff at a hearing. Again, you know, different code than the city, but many times we had a proposal that we didn't like, and we kicked it back to staff prior to voting on it again. And it felt very much like last hearing that our hands were tied, and we wanted, it's like, man, great work, almost there, but we don't feel great about this, and we don't have the option of making those tweaks and using our expertise. So for what it's worth, that's kind of my thoughts here, and I don't know how to move forward from it, but yeah.
Well, I was just going to actually throw this over at Chris here in a second, right? But I was just going to say, I appreciate, if you don't mind, I was just going to throw in a comment here. I get what you're saying. In the city of Ridgefield, when I was there, our planning commission did basically the exact same thing. They'd come to them, they'd workshop it, it'd go back to staff, come back, workshop it, two, three times. And things wouldn't get to the city for months and months and months and months sometimes. And I think the process in which we have here is staff brings something to us. We look at it here and we say, hey, you know what, could we look at this, or could we look at that? And then staff can make, you know, some changes and things like that, and then bring it to us there. And then we have the opportunity, and correct me if I'm wrong, we have the opportunity at that point to say, you know what staff is bringing to us is good work, it's great, but we don't feel good about it. And so we would not recommend to the county council, we vote no and say, we wouldn't recommend that they pass it this way. At that point, maybe, bringing up, you know, the Robert's Rules of Order kind of thing for us to get better acquainted with, to go, okay, what's Robert's Rules of Order? How do we handle that? If you, like, I think at the last meeting, what you're talking about is, hey, you had some changes you felt should be made, but you didn't know how to quite present it to where we could vote on it to then say, okay, this is how we'd like to, with our amendments, we'd like to send that up to council. I think is the process in which we go through currently. Is that, does that make sense?
Yes, but the challenge is, so our workshop here, we could have great opinions and said, hey, this we need this recommendation, this recommendation, this recommendation. But we've already published the calendar. We've already published everything. Mm-hmm. So it would have to trigger a whole, if staff makes changes, it triggers an entire new significant changes, it can trigger an entire new waiting period, so to speak.
Oh, right? Okay.
And the other thing is, like, when you're talking about something like the housing option study, in something so wonky and technical, do you come with 80 amendments to be voted on site clearance distance, on whether stop signs are included in the site clearance distance on a, you know, on a residential corner lot, and then in getting the wording correct on that, it's just, it's not an appropriate time to do that kind of work. It's really in the weeds work. Something like more policy, broader stuff of what we're, you know, our goals for aging in place, I can see where those become, you know, like, can we include something about, you know, mobility for, you know, the blind, you know? You can make some kind of general something like that, but when you get really technical, and where I think a lot of our expertise can really be relied on and to help and to guide our council, I think our process needs to be looked at. So
okay, with that, I'm gonna, oh, you want to say something?
I just want to add, I just think from the sake of expediency, if we take months and months and months to send something to council, council may take months and months and months also. So in the term of expediency, I don't think that's a good fit, because right now council has the ability to nitpick. I mean, just like what they're doing the housing code right now, where they voted on some portions of it and tabled the rest to discuss later. I think that that's their job, is to get down to make the minute changes. I see ourselves more as an overall. Well, I'm not sure this is a great idea, but I'm going to vote for it and let count. Here's our recommendation, just from the sense of timing.
I appreciate the timing aspect from an expedient side, because I'm always wanting to get stuff through as quick as possible. Policy government is designed to work slowly, and because it takes so much time to get it up to the dais that you want to get it right. And I view my role actually opposite of what you've described. My experience has been opposite, in that my job is to kind of crawl into the weeds, because, you know, I can be real hyper focused on a document and working through some issues that I see, and taking input from, you know, like when people publicly testify, sometimes that triggered us kicking it back, because there was a whole blind spot that the public brought, and we're like, that's a good point, we need to address that. And then we help work through all that stuff, because the council has so many other things, and so they're relying on us to go through a lot of those issues. So, you know, maybe different philosophies, but it's not, I don't view my role as to help push stuff through, especially if I think it's problematic. And then, well, we'll let them sort it out. I want to be more in a supportive role, where we're working through a lot of these issues. And then, so it helps staff in general, because we have good code and it makes clear sense, and it helps the council. So that was my concern, my thought.
So. Okay, Chris, you want to say a few words?
Thanks. So I would suggest that if you have 80 amendments, you bring them forward. Honestly, probably you won't find that you have 80, especially not in the case of the housing study, which I heard, you know, take your pick, was 90 or 95% there. I mean, if what you're talking is something that's just a tad bit not there, it's probably not going to be 80 amendments. The other thing is, it has to go back and be re-noticed if it is not, if the changes are not encompassed within the nature and the scope of what was proposed under the already published notice. If what you're talking about is changing a setback in a whole enormous housing code revision, that's probably not sufficient to change the nature or scope of what was being considered. And so I would say that would not be enough to require a new published notice. Now, obviously it's a matter of degree. And so that's, you know, that's the question, and you have to look at it individually. But the amendment process is the way to do it. The workshop process that enables a good discussion of what's wrong or what's right is a way to do it. I don't know, I have to say, I don't think the code requires that you have a workshop on the second and then 14 days later you have the hearing. I don't think that's in the code anywhere. I think it could take longer to have the hearing, which would create more time to publish a notice, more time to work on anything that needed to be changed. One thing that the Planning Commission does not have, I don't know how much, pardon me, the Planning Commission knows about the county charter, but one of the primary issues that I think was pivotal in the writing of the charter and the scheme of the county charter was that the freeholders, the folks who wrote the charter the first time when it was adopted, decided that it was not proper for the elected officials who are now called councilors to direct staff what to do. The council is a legislative body. Staff are under the executive, the county manager. So the council doesn't go to community development and say, approve that permit, for example. And I would say that as an advisory body to council, you are in limbo. You're somewhere in the legislative system. You're somewhere in the executive system because of the way that you work with staff. But I don't think that you have the right under the charter to tell staff what to do. So kicking things back is not something that's going to happen. But raising very specific questions and giving specific suggestions, those are things that are really, really helpful in the process. What we didn't hear during what we heard in the housing debate is Commissioner Wogan had a very specific proposal for an amendment. It didn't get a second. It died. But it was a specific proposal. It was a way to amend things. It wasn't send it back and fix it in unspecified ways. So I think that's your power, is the power of amendment, if you don't like what is given to you. And I personally have worked with planning commissions over many years to draft amendments when people didn't know exactly how to do it. I've worked with the council to draft amendments. Staff has, from time to time, done amendments. So it's not that you are powerless, but there's a way to do it. I hope that helps, and I think Oliver might have something he would like to say.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Planning Commissioner Jack Harun. Very good conversation. It was to be one of my asks of the Planning Commission. I'm already having a very similar conversation with my staff to consider perhaps providing the work session materials to the Planning Commission 1 week prior to your work session date. What is in code is that we have to publish what is going to be at your hearing 15 days prior to that. So this is a very timely conversation. I want to respect the fact that some of you do work and come here at 5:30. So even having that opportunity to give my staff time to plan ahead, some of this is very, very technical, I get that. Some of the work we do take a year or two or three, and it goes through a body like yours, like a technical advisory group or some other forum before they come to you. They deliberated all of that before they come to you. What I would like to see, and I do make this as an observation, what I would like to see is if you have concerns, comments, I make staff available, the project manager, reach out to them. The purpose of this work session is to have a deliberation with you. We're not asking you to rubber stamp anything that you know, we bring before you. We want you to deliberate, you hear from the public, you hear from those that participated in technical advisory group or forum. They come before you and tell you in some cases what they didn't like. You hear them. But just because one individual or one group didn't like what is put before you doesn't mean that you ignore the process that got us there. Just want to make that observation. But anytime you have concerns, just like today, you reach out to Susan or Jenna Kay. I have concern. Why don't you do this? Why didn't you consider that? They are ready to respond to that. And we have done that in the past, whereby we hear from the Planning Commission and we do an addendum. This is how we responded to your concerns. That's what I would like to see happen. But at the hearing, you have the power to make amendment. Jack, you made an amendment, you made a motion to send everything back to staff so that everything that Deeb raised is fixed. That is not specific. You can go back and look at the memo, the motion. I don't want to be particular. As the our legal counsel indicated, Planning Commission awarded them, made a motion to abolish or just not pass the design standards. Again, as Commissioner Matt mentioned, it wasn't seconded. It wasn't like it's not important, okay? But here we are. You make a motion if it's amended specifically, whatever is amended, but I make myself available and I'm making staff available. We're trying to accommodate the Planning Commission by at least if we can provide these materials a week before the actual work session so you will have ample time to review them. Even if we continue the process, because we don't have that in code, the only thing we have in, I don't have to go codify when we have to provide materials to the Planning Commission. You're not going to find that in our code. I'm trying to accommodate my staff, accommodate the consultant that we are working with, and then accommodate the Planning Commission. When we have a consultant, we write the scope of work and how many times they will approve, they will appear before you. It's in my budget, and I don't want to go continue meetings and running over my budget for that project. So I want to accommodate the Planning Commission. I want to accommodate staff. I want to accommodate the consultant we work with, and then the expense that I do. It doesn't mean that you don't have the opportunity to make amendments. You reach out to me. You reach out to individual staff that are working on the project. We come here with any amendments you want to make, what other questions you want to make, but you cannot just make a motion, go fix it. I want to know what that is. Specifically, I want to know what that is. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm going to go fix.
Oh, go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, I guess my frustration becomes, because I don't see that as much of a partnership as what I've experienced in the past. And I appreciate, from a managerial standpoint, trying to stay on timeline and on budget, but I'm just a believer in the public process and making sure that the voices are heard. When we have 1,000 pages dropped 18 hours before our work session, it's a lot to digest. And so those things, it's frustrating when you're trying to do a good job. You're trying to do what you're appointed to do, and you take that seriously. And so I guess what I'm asking for is trying to understand the parameters, because my expectations are different than the reality, and trying to figure out the process here and the best way to work through, our great county's process. And I appreciate staff. I know it's a tremendous amount of work, and you guys have twice on your plate probably than what you'd like. So I don't want to come across as not appreciating what you do and your staff does. But I do want to feel that our commissioners' times are valued and our input is valued,
and that we're not a box to check, and that we're able to engage in some of these elements more. So that was my thank you.
Just one last comment I'm going to throw out just as a reminder to everyone that I believe the county council does take, or at least some of them, if not all, they do take the time to read our comments at our hearings. And so as we're going through the process in our hearing, just think of everything you say, they're reading. So if we say, hey, you know what, we really didn't like that. You know, as a whole, it's pretty good, but this one little thing, I wish we could have tweaked that. I wish we had more time to tweak that, but really appreciate staff. But that one little thing, they're going to read that, and they're going to go, I wonder what they were talking about. And they're going to go look into that. And that might be part of the reason why they're going apart and they're setting this aside and they're looking at that and all that, because we had a lot of dialogue. We talked a lot about all those different issues. There was a lot of things that we really liked, but there was some that we didn't. I think they really read what we had to say, and they took it to heart. And I think we do have an impact in that way. I think also there's been times that I've been here that as when there's a seven, when staff works really, really hard and they put something together and they put their blood, sweat, and tears into this, whatever it is, and then they bring it to the Planning Commission and we all vote no, that's a tough one. That is really tough because it's a tough one to vote no, because I know staff puts a lot of time into things, but if there's just things I don't like, I'm going to vote no, and nothing personal. And I think what that does as a Planning Commission, it sends a message. Ooh, why did seven Planning Commissioners not like this? What's going on? They're going to ask questions, okay? When it's a split vote, I don't know what that sends, but I, you know what I mean? The way we vote, the things we say, they read that. And I know they read it because I've had a county councilor call me and ask me to expand on my comments. So I think we do have an impact. I know from a standpoint of, hey, back and forth and tweak and do all that little, that fine tuning, that work that you really want to do. And I can feel the passion in you and you wanting to do it. I'm with you on that. I'm with you. I just know that's just not the process here at the county. It was a difficult transition for me in the beginning of this, but I kind of learned the parameters and went, oh, well, my vote does count. And what I do say, they do listen to. So well, you know, your hard work and the comments you bring, you brought some excellent. I'm sitting there looking at this guy going, holy buckets, where have you been? Because you got some good comments. And you bring a lot to the table. So just know you're very valued, okay? All of us value you, all that, the energy and the thought process you bring to the table, okay? So thank you for all your stuff. So with that, I think we can bring this meeting to adjournment. Thank you all.